Hola, hola y bienvenidos a Tu Salud, the definitive podcast for Latine and Indigenous health policy, where we talk about all things Latine, policy, and our health. I am Dr. Ceci Aquino, Executive Director at the Latino Coalition for a Healthy California. And today, I am joined by the wonderful Francisco Silva, President and CEO of the California Primary Care Association. Today, we'll be talking about the beauty of our childhood memories, running through the fields, farm worker justice, Mecha days. We'll also be talking about the importance of seeing our community's diversity in the healthcare and public health workforce. And finally, we'll be talking about health equity as an art form. So let's get started. Okay, well, let us get started. And you know, our first question for you is, tell us a little bit more about yourself, your story. Where do you come from? Who are you?
My name is Francisco Silva. I'm the current president and CEO of the California Primary Care Association. Just on my personal story, I'm the youngest of seven. I have four sisters, two brothers, and myself. We immigrated from Mexico when I was about 4 or 5 years old. To the Salinas Valley. My parents were farm workers. In fact, everybody in the family worked in the fields of the Salinas Valley, when I was a kid. And that's very much our story, you know, that immigrant story. We did. My family's from the state of Jalisco, but we went from the state of Jalisco to Sonora and lived in the border region for about 12 years. So we kind of have a mix of that culture, you know, for folks that are from Mexico, different parts of Mexico have different cultures. And we certainly have the Jalisco culture, but also that border region culture, you know, where you start using nicknames in English and we use Santa Claus and those Tres Reyes Magos and kind of a mix.
You got all the gifts.
Yeah, a little bit. Tortillas de harina y de maíz.
There you go.
But in Salinas is really where I really got to see my first taste of Latinos coming together, a community coming together and making an impact and finding a voice, you know, where I grew up in the east side of Salinas. Yeah. And at that time, you know, we were often ignored. We didn't have a lot of services and there was a few activists in the community that came together, including one of my, you know, my flag football coach was a teacher at my school, eventually became an assembly member, Simon Salinas, and then a lawyer in town named Jesse Sanchez, his parents owned the first, one of the first Mexican-owned stores in town. And it was back when we had records. They had books and records in Spanish and Espanol, and he was very active. So that was kind of my launching pad, based on the community in Salinas and the needs of farm workers and immigrants to you know, have an interest in making an impact in my community.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing. Tell me, what was it like to grow up as the youngest in the family? El consentido?
El consentido. Right. So it has its upsides because, my sister's, and my brothers, particularly the older ones, you know, they love on you. They become like your second moms after mom. Right. That's the way we do it when we have those big families. So yeah, you get a lot of attention and they're very sweet to you. But it also means you get left behind sometimes. Nobody wants to take the little brother when they're going to go do stuff. And there's a luxury to that because you get to, you know, kind of do your own thing. And there's a level of independence when you're the youngest of the family that big. But the best part is that when we come together, it's a big class and it's always fun. You have automatic playmates and we're super close to each other. And we've remained that way through many, many years.
That's great.
But I get to learn from them, really, frankly, being the youngest. It's a huge benefit. Yeah. You know, the oldest in families, they tend to have huge responsibilities compared to the youngest. And certainly my older brothers and sisters were, you know, they're the reasons I've had many opportunities in my life.
That's so great.
Because they worked hard and made sacrifices for the younger ones. So I'm blessed being the youngest.
Oh, that's great. I grew up with three younger sisters. So I think what I saw with my youngest sister was that she actually matured really fast because she was growing up with other adults, right? So it almost fast-tracked her maturity. And I don't know if you experienced something like that, but as the youngest, you have to, you know, keep up with the rest of the family. So it's also that unique perspective that you carry, and you know how to interact, right, with different folks, different characters, personalities. I think there's a richness also to being the youngest.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. Like my mom would say, oh, I felt bad because there's so many of you. I don't know if I gave you enough attention. Mm. And she did. She definitely did. But there's an element when you're the youngest, you kind of like, you're a little bit on your own to some extent. Like I always tell my son and my daughter the story of, you know, wanting to go play baseball.
Yeah.
And I rode my bike to the baseball, the park. And they said, well, you need a birth certificate. You need to fill out this form. And then grab the forms, ride my bike. I'm like in fifth grade, right? Ride my bike back home. And you're translating at the same time, right?
Right.
My mom, my parents didn't speak English. Have them fill out forms, get my birth certificate, go back. And I would register myself for stuff.
I
did that for baseball. I did that I showed up to a summer school one year because it was a special program where they went and took kids to different places. And I thought it was fun. I just showed up, hopped on the bus and went to school.
You were navigating the system.
Yeah. So there is an element of you just mature quicker.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's so great. Oh, thank you for sharing that.
You were the oldest, right? So you had that.
Yeah.
Role of raising yourself and helping with the little ones.
Exactly. But I think there's such a unique perspective depending on where you sit in the family, right? But I don't think one is better than another. I think all of our different experiences helps us see the work now, right? Or just our approach to life can be influenced by that experience growing up.
Absolutely.
Y cuéntame, I know you mentioned that farm working experience and having that beautiful connection with your family. What was it that you saw, maybe a story that resonated with you growing up in that setting and with that beautiful experience that really roots you today?
You know, it's hard to pick one thing.
Hmm.
I went and I worked with both of my parents. My dad worked in the agricultural fields and in the cauliflower.
Mm-hmm.
Tie rubber bands around the cauliflower plant so the sun doesn't burn it.
Aww.
And you know that some of the memories that stay with me are some of the hard stuff and some of the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Right. The fun stuff was just being with dad.
Aww.
And getting to connect with the men and women working there and the stories that they tell and learning the language and listening to the stories that they tell as immigrants and back, you know, about their pueblos in Mexico. And those are memories that are very special that come up in my life all the time when I'm tell a story about why we have to do the work that we have to do for our people.
Yeah.
And then there's the things that stick out with you that weren't right.
Yeah.
And at the moment you might have felt wrong, like it wasn't right, but you didn't know exactly why.
Right.
Later on you reflect on it.
Yeah.
Like we would be out in the field and we had no water.
Right.
And it was hot. And they had a 12-year-old out there working all day.
Yeah.
And it would get so muddy that my dad would get stuck in the mud, and I wasn't big enough or strong enough to get out of the mud. He would have to pick me up and get my boots out of the mud. Or eating our lunch and my dad having to eat it so fast.
Yeah.
And nowhere to really wash our hands.
Right.
But you're on the dirt, on the floor,
those
kind of stories stick out with you, stick with you. And for me, at least they drove me to want to better my life, my family's life,
right,
my community's life. And then I also worked with my mom. Mm-hmm, and I worked, my mom, she worked in a flower nursery for a long time. And again, very similar, like a lot of sweet memories. For my mom, it was a community for her. Of her comrades at work. And that's where they would tell stories about like how you get healthcare.
Right.
You know, where you find resources for school. Or, oh no, watch out, there's these gangs, right? Make sure your kids don't fall into those traps. It became their community. At lunchtime, they all surround, it became their community gathering place at work. So when she stopped working, she missed it. And they had an employer that provided healthcare at a time where that was not as common for workers. And I remember once I was in college complaining, you know, I was an activist in college. I was a machista and talking about, you know, workers not making enough money. And then my mom thought me and said, yeah, I probably could have made more, but I worked at a place that treated us with dignity and respect.
There you go.
Healthcare, and we got vacation, and if you guys were sick, it was a place of support, and so she held her boss in high regard, and he was an employer that kept people for a long time.
That's great.
So you know, those kind of things that stick out with me, in some of the memories that I have from that, that farm worker experience in the Salinas Valley.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. I think what you shared about that balance, right? The beauty with some of the hard realities that we had to face at such an early age and keeping that balance, right? The joy, the fact that our families, regardless of what we were doing, right? They would bring us along. So we have that time shared with our loved ones. And the community pieces, right? Finding familia wherever we went because there was a need to share resources or information in the community. And I love that we can say that was our experience because I think for both of us, with your work with CPCA and at LCHC, that's where we see our communities thrive, right? When there's a lot of resource sharing, when we're going to where the community is, right? And I think that's the beauty of community health centers and community clinics. That's where the community finds other families like their own.
Yeah. And that's the piece that we're, when we talk about the challenges of today in healthcare and all the things that we're trying to do, there's a push to really mainstream healthcare.
Right.
And what I mean by that, you know, where it looks more like a Sutter or a Kaiser or something like that. We talk about we can lose what made us, it makes us special, which is the community-based, community-driven approach that, that provides that forum, right? That's more than medical care. It's it's a community, a place for community, a place to share resources, a place to have meetings about things that are happening in the community that aren't necessary, you know, connected to the health center themselves.
Right.
Keeping that, you know, that's the secret ingredient that makes us special. And frankly, we believe provides a better model of whole person care than anything else, particularly for our community.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So Francisco running the fields goes off to become the machista. What comes next? What was part of that journey?
So, I'll backtrack a little bit.
Okay,
right? I think I mentioned Tessie Sanchez in Simon Salinas and others in the community. They had this group called the ALSA Betterment Committee.
Okay,
and they all connected. I'll answer your question, I think it's so related to that. And growing up, I remember thinking, wow, this ALSA Betterment Committee is you know, super organized, powerful entity because they were speaking out about the issues that my community in East Salinas needed. And later, once I went to college, it inspired me. Like, I ended up walking for like the first city council member in 150 years of Latino descent in Salinas. Mm-hmm. And there was a Voting Rights Act lawsuit in Watsonville and in Salinas. But the MALDEF was involved in Joaquin Avila. So I was, you know, sixth grade, seventh grade, and all that happened, really impacted me.
Yeah.
And so I that's why I became a machista. I'm like, oh yeah, I want to be an activist. I want to have a voice and make a difference.
Yeah.
And then I decided, oh, some of the people that were doing that were lawyers. I want to go to law school.
Right.
And I went back in undergrad. I was a history, political science, history major, minor in political science at Santa Clara University. Mm-hmm. And I went back and interviewed a lot of the people that were involved in that movement.
Okay.
And including Jesse Sanchez, who was one of the leaders. And I remember asking him, like, you know, the House Betterment Committee, what was your budget? And how are you organized? And, you know, and he starts laughing because I was asking all these questions, assuming it's this big entity.
Right.
And he said, you know, the House Betterment Committee was a couple of my compadres and comadres.
Oh.
We'd get together and watch our favorite TV show and saying, we got to do this, we got to do that. And that's it. He goes, we came together, no money, but we started speaking out.
Yeah.
And that had a big impact in Salinas. So that really stuck with me.
Yeah.
The lawyer piece really stuck with me. So I went on, I was an activist during 209 and 187, which is 209, the elimination of affirmative action.
Yeah.
And 187 was that, you know, anti-immigrant initiative that Pete Wilson pushed.
It's been 30 years this year.
And I was an activist at that time. And I remember feeling really just frustrated.
Yeah.
And feeling like we got to do more.
Mm-hmm.
So I signed up for this fellowship program in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, let's see if we can make a difference from inside. Can we get to the political policy-making table? I did a fellowship in Sacramento and learned a lot about, like, okay, there's a way to really pull different levers and have an impact and mostly have resources for communities. I was part of the budget committee, and Denise Duchaney was an assemblywoman who was just awesome Latina that found very creative ways to fund programs for farm workers, farm worker housing was a huge thing.
Yeah.
Worked for farm workers when we had storms and other things like that.
Yeah.
And then eventually law school after that.
Mm-hmm.
So law school and eventually back to politics and policy because I couldn't stay away.
It was calling you back.
Yeah, it's calling me back.
Well, we needed you and we needed your voice. So I'm so glad that you came back.
Now, happy to be engaged. I think, you know, everybody has a really important role in the work that we do. We need the activists on the ground. We need the organizers, and and then you have lawyers and folks like you who are leading and bringing people together to give us a voice. I think we all got. Everybody has a different role.
Yeah.
And just finding the role that works for you.
Yeah, 100%. And like you shared, right? There's different ways to influence the system. Our parents found ways to influence the system and navigate systems that weren't created by them or for them, right? But they helped us, you know, continue our education, guided us through that. And now for us, with more opportunities, different platforms, we're able to influence the systems in a different way now, either from within, like you shared, right? Or from outside with advocacy and making sure that we're guiding the policies and all the implementation of them in a way that's equitable for our community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as you go through that journey, you learn that things that you thought may not be impactful are.
Right.
Like one of the things I reflect on is the stories we tell are immensely powerful.
Yes.
You know, in our voice, in our community's voice, and then recognizing, like, you know, I haven't been a farm worker for a very long time. I may not be the right voice, but can I bring that voice when we're trying to figure things out? And that's, yeah, I think, really important to keep in mind, because I think that's what really moves people.
I agree.
All the other things help, right? The organizing and having political influence and legal, the lobbying, but like that story, telling our story is really powerful. Staying in touch with the community.
I completely agree. And we're in partnership with that. There's a lot more that our farm working communities need, right, from us, and the safety net systems to protect them and to be able to provide for their needs. They do so much for our communities, right, for the state as a whole. We saw during COVID, right, they kept the state fed and kept the economy moving. So I think there's a lot from our end that we can continue to advance this justice movement for our farm working communities in California.
Absolutely.
That's great. Okay, so this amazing personal trajectory, how do we get to CPCA? And tell us a little bit more about your role there and your vision for health equity through your role.
Sure. I started my policy work on the education front. And the reason being, I was naturally saw education as a way to get out of poverty, empower a community, empower myself. And we had a long history in the Latino community that we were underrepresented in undergraduate education, graduate programs, law school, medical school. Yeah. So that was my passion, where I wanted to make an impact. Mm-hmm. And in this kind of work, sometimes you fall into things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You want to make an impact. And I wasn't looking to work in healthcare. But an opportunity came up to work for the California Medical Association. And it's one of the oldest associations in California. And it was an opportunity to really engage in healthcare. And then one of the first things, so I went there, eventually became the general counsel there. And one of the first things we tackled is the cut to Medi-Cal. At a time where the budget was not healthy for the state. And they drastically cut Medi-Cal. We put together I was general counsel, put together a big coalition to sue and get an injunction for the cuts. And that's kind of the beginning of my healthcare journey, my passion for protecting the resources that are most meaningful to our community. So when the opportunity came up, I was asked whether I was interested in being the next CEO and president of the California Primary Care Association. Mm-hmm. It was a no-brainer because, health centers serve with 7.7 million patients across the state. A third of all Medi-Cal patients are served by community clinics, health centers, and half of them are Latino.
Yeah.
30% don't speak Spanish. So it was an opportunity for me to really use everything I've learned to do the best I can to get resources for community health centers, for the communities that they serve and the patients they have there. Yeah. So that's like a 20-year journey. And I really do feel like I'm home. Mm-hmm. That's what I call our health centers and our board. It was there's certain points where you leave home, go to college, and you try different things, and you have your ups and downs, and then you come home, right? I feel like I'm home, representing. I had to go through all that. Yeah. I had to be a litigator. I had to be an activist. I had to be a farm worker.
You were picking up all the little pieces that you needed for today.
It's my calling. And I think, for us, it goes back to the beginning of my story.
Yeah.
When we think about health equity, the way, we think about health equity and the way I think about health equity, it's of course, access to healthcare. It has to be affordable.
Quality.
Within reach. Yeah. It has to be of quality. It has to be timely, right? I mean, stories that we hear of people where I got a physical therapy referral, but I got to wait 6 months, right? health equity is all that, making sure that we treat the medical side, but it's also whole person care.
Yeah.
It's behavioral health, mental health, and all that, all the resources around that, because, you know, we learned that through COVID, right?
Yeah.
The impact that behavioral mental health has had on people, both old and young.
Yeah.
And it's a space that health centers are really growing.
Yeah.
We're trying to grow capacity. But it also means, you know, so it's that's the access part.
Right.
And then how are you providing the care? How is it quality? Like, is it in culture?
Yeah.
Is it in language? Mm-hmm. And all the studies show, right, when the care is with somebody who understands your culture, understands your language, the quality of the care is a lot better.
Yeah. And outcomes are better.
Significantly better, yeah. Outcomes are better. You know, from as simple as just the patient is able to communicate better and open up.
Yeah.
It's also just understanding them and communicating. Medicine is not a science. They say it's an art form, and it's part of that. It's the relationship piece. So that's important for us from an health equity perspective. And another one that I know we share common work in is, you know, one of our pillars for health equity is civic health, the health of our community.
Yes.
Are they engaged civically? Do they vote? Do they show up to school board meetings? Are we addressing the social determinants of health at the community level? And, you know, we've embarked to really invest. A lot of our health centers do it, do it already.
Yeah.
And we're on this journey to teach each other how to do it better, and then
that.
How to collaborate with other organizations
that
are doing it for a long time, right?
Yeah.
There's community-based organizations that have been doing the civic engagement work and saying, can we partner with you? Can we be a platform? Since, you know, we have health centers in the very communities that we're all trying to reach.
Right. We're stronger together.
Yeah, we're strong. Can do the work together. We're in the same place.
Yeah.
And can we share resources?
Yeah.
There are some resources we have, and there's resources they have, and together we're stronger. But what's that? That's a Cesar Chavez quote, right? Together, all things are possible.
There you go.
Cover of my notebook for Cesar Chavez quote, just as a reminder.
I love that. Yeah. I think something that you shared really stood out to me, that this work is an art form, right? It's not rigid by any means. It's a beautiful masterpiece of different art pieces coming together to create the care that lasts, right? And even if we think about music, art, the way that our communities enjoy time together, right? You put a little bit of salsita, cumbia in the background. You're eating a carne asada. There's so many components to our health, right? And I think being able to recognize that art form in the way that you're providing and serving our community makes a huge difference.
It's almost bringing, you know, that makes me think, that's such a beautiful way to frame it. It makes me think about, like, bringing back the things that we learned.
Mm-hmm.
You asked me, you know, what I learned from my farm worker experience, bringing back what our parents did, right? How the farm community, doing that in the work that we do today and not forgetting that, right? Like connecting, like you and I connecting and saying, oh, how can we work together and figure things out? Mentoring the next generation.
Exactly.
Folks and giving them space to grow and learn
opportunities,
all that, and it's as simple. I do think it's as simple as coming together and talking, and having the chocolate, the pan dulce, and
there you go, cafecito.
Or el compadre y la compadre, having a beer as you plan the also better we committee or something
exactly.
like that. If we're going to tie it all back, right, it makes you think of also your question about being the youngest.
Mm.
When you are the youngest, right, like the older ones have opinions, and they tend to lead, and then you kind of become the one that puts it all together.
Expert
we all get
negotiator.
Along and move in this direction when you're the youngest, you're watching and figuring that out. I think I bring that skill set to the work that we do.
Listen,
find commonality, figure out how to move together.
Exactly.
That's helpful.
Exactly.
In our work.
And now $1 million question for you. How do we achieve health equity for our Latino and Indigenous communities in California? What's left for us to do?
There's lots for us to do. I think it's if I go big picture, I'll go big picture and granular. Mm-hmm. Right. I think we need to continue to invest where our community is.
Yeah.
Right. Whatever we're building the infrastructure for healthcare has to be in the community.
Yeah.
We saw that in COVID, right? When we were trying to vaccinate, state of California, vaccinate people, and we had these mega vaccine sites.
Yeah.
You were still seeing a lot of people because it was transportation issues, work issues. I think from a big picture perspective, when we're designing care, the community within reach. And then on the granular side, I think you have to have coverage. And, you know, having healthcare for all, and that was fundamental, right, for everyone. And Medi-Cal expansion also huge. But then you have people kind of in the middle where you don't qualify for Medi-Cal. You can get care through Covered California, but is it affordable?
Right.
So I think affordability is huge, something that you have to continue to work on. So nobody's left behind. Everybody gets access to care. And then once you have coverage, it has to be accessible. And of quality. And those are the things that we talked about. And on the in language and in culture, addressing the pipeline issue. If we're going to focus on our community, we still have dramatically less Latino trained or bilingual physicians that lag behind our population by far. And we need to start that in investing in from the primary care,
elementary
high school.
College
level. And really focus on that.
Yeah.
And then beyond, the doctors is the rest of the workforce. One of the things when we get together as health centers, can we train our own community to bring them up? And then you bring them up through a ladder approach where you become a medical assistant, and you can be a nurse, and then you can be a doctor, or you can... being an administrator or CEO, I think that's something that if we're going to focus in a specific area. And then social determinants of health. I think it's an area that health centers for a long time have done the work. Not all of it, right? A lot of health centers originally were built because they were trying to address something, patient population, a health condition, a community that was ignored. A Mexican immigrant community, a Central American immigrant community, a Black community, the LGBTQ community. So because of that, we've done some of the work already to address, access to food and address environmental justice issues. But I think now for us is like, In this new space, how do we do that in a way that's more comprehensive? How do we partner with others in the community to do that? The work is on underway.
Yeah,
it's got a name now.
Yes,
15 years ago. Continuing to work on that and not saying it's somebody else's problem but ours.
Right.
To help solve
ours. I love that. I like what you said about building these pathway programs for our youth, right? Like you mentioned, you started in that fellowship and it opened up a whole new world for you. Similarly for me, it was fellowships, internships, volunteer experiences that helped, you know, provide those opportunities of growth. And we need to continue creating new systems so that our students can be inspired and can see themselves one day sitting where you are, leading, you know, across the state.
I agree, right? I think there's no better reaction than to see somebody young and say, well, he did it, I can too.
Yes.
But also understanding, right? We all have different challenges and obstacles and helping people through that journey.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I think we can do that through healthcare.
Yeah.
It is one of the biggest segments of the California economy.
Exactly.
And an opportunity for yeah. growth, for community, and an opportunity for leadership opportunities.
Yes.
Yes. And everything you can think of.
Yes. And it's a sound economic decision as well. Investing in 40% of your population, right? Making sure that population is healthy, has jobs, is infusing the workforce, will only strengthen our beautiful state of California.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, that brings us to the end of our conversation. I really appreciate you. Thank you for sharing your story with us, all those beautiful memories from the fields to the Mecha days to now the amazing leadership work that you're leading with CPCA. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. And thank you for your leadership for our community, for Latinos and Latinas all across the state of California.
Gracias.